Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Ryan Lambert from EP Rinkside.
I am Sean McIndoe from The Athletic.
And, hey, you know what? We were just talking about it before the show started. Let's talk about it right now. Shane Wright, back in the NHL, scores against the team that refused to draft him. Well, one of the three teams that refused to draft him, I guess. That was fun.
That was nice. Fun.
Good goal, too.
Yeah. We all kind of, like 2 weeks ago when they sent him down to the AHL, we all sort of looked at the schedule and went, oh, okay, so he's going to come. Oh, Montreal would be the first game back. I wonder if they'll put him in the lineup. And they did, and he got the goal. His first NHL goal, which I don't think any of us thought was going to take until mid-December, but here we are. Great moment for him. I mean, and I say that even as it feels like we're trying to like will something into existence that may or may not actually be there. Similar to when, on draft day, we were like, oh, he's staring them down. And maybe he was, maybe not. But I hope he was staring them down. I hope he's, got a chip on his shoulder about it, because it makes it more fun and entertaining.
Yeah, for sure. And last night he played 11 minutes. That's the second highest number of his young NHL career.
That's twice his usual ice time. And
pretty almost. Sad but true. I guess the other thing to say is he destroyed the AHL when they sent him down there. He scored like 4 goals in 5 games or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, he's still... He's still a very, very good prospect. I mean, he's a classic case of, he's one of these guys that is like really stuck in the middle of being too good for junior, maybe even too good for the AHL, but not good enough for the NHL on a team that is winning and focused on winning right now.
Right.
So what do you do? Well, I mean, the answer is you probably release him to the Team Canada for the World Juniors, and that at least buys you a few more weeks where he's playing an important role in a big spotlight and all of that. And then you got to figure it out for the rest of the year. But, I was there that day in Montreal it was fantastic. Like, that was one of the best sports moments and crowd reactions that I've ever been a part of. Like, it was just... We've talked about it, but it was just phenomenal to be there, it's cool to see it kind of get to continue the storyline in some way, even if we're maybe having to force it a little bit.
Yeah, hey, look, we want everything to be wrestling, right? So this becoming wrestling, that's cool to us.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other way to really slice and dice it here. We want the feuds. We want the hot feuds. And, hey, they're not all going to end up being this good. And, as with any, highly rated young prospect, I do hope Shane Wright ends up, being, an actual good NHL player.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this about Seattle. What do you think's going on with them lately? They're giving up a lot of goals all of a sudden.
Yeah. Well, I wrote a whole big thing on Seattle this week.
Yes, you did.
Where I basically I whiffed on this completely, and I'm not alone. In fact, I mean, I know for a fact that nobody saw this coming. But what to me was interesting is it's not just that. Oh, I didn't think Seattle was going to be good. Because, like I say, I don't remember seeing one single preseason pick that had them in the playoffs, let alone near the top of the league. But if you had told me they were going to be good, I still would have been wrong about how they would get there. Like, if you had said, okay, yeah, we get that you don't think they're going to be good, but give us some optimism. Give us a reason to think. Tell us what it looks like if they could be good. I would have been completely wrong because I would have started off like, well, you know, goaltending, right? That's always your answer when there's unexpected success anywhere. Oh, the goaltending's going to be good. Philip Grubauer's going to get back to Vezina finalist stature, and they're going to be fine. Martin Jones won't have to play much. Yeah, and that hasn't happened at all. Grubauer has been awful, at least according to the numbers. I know every time you say these days a goalie's bad, you get like...
Well, here's what you got to understand. All the guys on the team, they're bad, and the goalie's the only good player on the team.
Yeah. You know, if you actually watch the games, you would... Like, he's got an 860 save percentage. Brother. He's got an 860 save percentage. That means he needs to make...
Is that true?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I don't know about after last night, but that as of yesterday, he was at like 860, which means you need... If you're getting 30 shots a game, that means you need one extra save a game, which is to say one less goal per game to get up to 890, which is still bad. So he's...
John, I gotta tell you, brother.
Yeah.
You're way off on this one. He's at 868.
Oh, did he bump all the way? He was he in net last night? I don't even remember.
I don't think he was. Okay. I don't know.
868. So okay. So yeah, you're still he needs to get one goal a game better to get to below 900, which is still bad.
Bad.
So don't, you know, I know that you watched the games and you saw him make three good saves once and you've decided that he's a great goalie. But he isn't. And that's, in a sense, for Seattle, that's good, right? Like because if you're winning with bad goaltending, knowing how goaltending fluctuates and all the weird stuff that goes on with it, you're in decent shape. And Martin Jones has played a bunch, partly because Grubauer is hurt. And Martin Jones has also not been great, but they haven't needed him to, because one of the other ways I was wrong was I would have said, all right, you know what? They don't have a ton of firepower. Grind it out. You win 2-1, right? This is the NHL. Even the teams that have a ton of skill are trying to grind it out. They would rather win 2-1 than 6-5. So if you're an expansion team, no, not at all. They're high scoring, both ends of the ice. You get a lot of goals in these games. They played a 9-8 game last week, which is insane. They're fun to watch. They're, they're a great underdog story. They're like, I feel like, I'm sure if we get three more months in and they're, you know, still there at the top of the league, you will see some of that resentment start to bubble up that we saw with Vegas, where people are like, you know, it's too much, it's too soon, the league has made it too easy. But, you know, at least the crack, like they paid some dues last year. Like they
made a due.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't jump right to the top. So this is a very easy team to like. They're fun. It's just a great story. And I apologize to Kraken fans that I wrote about how good they were and then they lost to Montreal and to kick off what is probably going to be a 10-game losing streak.
Well, yeah. So now it's two because they just lost to the Panthers the other night. But in the last few games, they've given up 5-2-4-8-2-5-4. Turning back into a pumpkin a little bit, I think, is the...
Well, I mean,
the issue. I mean,
the eight goals is a win, right? I mean, that's the old Grant Fear. Like, he'll give up eight, but he won't give you the ninth.
It's a big W for them. It's a situation where, you know, I just look, they're shooting 12.3%. I have a feeling this particular team doesn't have the skill to maintain a 12.3% shooting percentage all year.
I would agree that is likely true.
maybe. But, you know, they're playing okay. They're not, like, terrible or anything. I think maybe if you say both of them are kind of normalized a little bit and they've banked enough points maybe that you can feel good about where they're at, especially because, like, Calgary's just kind of, like, muddling around and Edmonton kind of just muddling around. Although, God, Edmonton has a little bit of a better excuse than Calgary does. But I don't know. I looked it up. I had them 28th to start the year, right? So
yeah,
me and you were on the same page here.
So in other words, you had them getting better because they were 30th last year.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, I mean, like you say, I was like, oh, their goalies will make them below average because their goalies are going to be bad. And their goalies have been bad.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of that is Jones more recently, but he's down to 890.
Yep.
So, you know. But that actually leads us into something I wanted to talk about more broadly, is this was going around yesterday. I don't know what, like, prompted everybody to suddenly realize this, but the league average save percentage is now down to 905,
mm-hmm.
which is the lowest it's been in quite some time. I think since like 06, 07, maybe. And this is only the fifth time. Now, granted, this is not a full season. So, you know, obviously things can change. But this is only the fifth time since like the mid 90s that the league wide save percentage has been down to 905 or less.
Yeah. Basically, other than the. Certainly the cap era. Other than those 2 years where it was mostly power play driven,
yeah.
I was actually surprised to look at it and see that the save percentages from like 96 to 2001 were actually similar. You know,
yeah.
Like in the 9-0 range, just because I remember that as being like, you know, the dead puck era has definitely kicked in. And
that was a lot about
defense.
Limiting shots.
Yeah,
right.
It was exactly. Fewer shots, and the goalies, even though they were bigger and had the big equipment and everything, hadn't really. I mean, they were certainly better than they had been, but it hadn't reached its peak. And in fact, right. Goaltending reached its peak, you know, just a few years ago, relative to, which is interesting because I've been told the dead puck era ended like because, you know, 2005, but the goaltending itself got significantly better, and then over the last 4 years or so, it's just not plummeted. I mean, we do this, right? We go overboard. Oh, scoring's through the roof, and you're like, it's up like 3%. Settle down. But more scoring is good, and more
sure.
More scoring, you know, less goaltending is good, because less goaltending. Every time I say more scoring's good, people are like, yeah, well, it's actually the scoring chances, and yes, but the more scoring you have, the more scoring chances feel like scoring chances. And if the goalies are no longer these impenetrable supermen, then it's more exciting to watch a game, because suddenly it starts feeling like more of these shots can actually go in. So the fact that this is happening and we don't know why is strange. But
so
at the same time, it's been happening long enough that we can, I don't think, well, it's just a fluke is an explanation anymore.
No, I totally agree. So I do want to dig in. What are your theories here?
I mean,
I have a few.
Okay.
Some of which are backed up by data and some of which are totally anecdotal.
Okay, let me hear your theories then, because I'm like, you know, I've got a couple, but I haven't really thought it through. So
number one, the number of empty net goals per game has basically doubled over the last 5 or 6 years.
Right.
And that is counted in the league-wide save percentage, even if the goalies are not in the net to make. So I think that's part of it, for sure.
Yeah, that's. I did not realize that was being counted.
It's
because
like,
everyone's pulling the goalies earlier, right? This is.
That would be my theory for why that is, yeah.
Okay.
My other theory about this, they reduced equipment sizes.
Yeah. That one
just enough to make a slight difference, I think.
Yeah.
And not a huge difference, but enough of one.
Because when they did it, a lot of us went, oh, it's just they're tinkering. Like, it's this minor change. You certainly can't tell from looking at a goaltender that anything has changed. A lot of them still look ridiculous skating around in these giant shoulder pads. But they did change something.
And they're not as bad as they used to be. So they used to be, like, comical. If, for people who haven't seen it, like, go look at J.S. Jaguar's pads from the 03 Cup Final.
Yeah.
It's fucking absurd.
And they would be wearing these giant jerseys and everything, and it was just... That was part of what was so infuriating about that era, is that, like, you're just sitting there... Like, just look at the TV, man. Like, we can see what's happening.
This fucking guy.
Look, like, where is Bettman? Where is the leadership? That, like, you know, this isn't a mystery. Like, look at these guys.
Yeah.
And they made very slight changes, mostly to like the upper gear. Like, we've always been focused on the leg pads. It feels like, But my understanding is they kind of tightened up, you know, around the torso in that, which maybe makes them just a bit more leaky under the arm sort of deal.
Yep. And so when I pointed this out last night, someone did say, like, and I'd never thought about it, but I do, again, anecdotally feel like it's true. You do see a lot more shots, like, trickle through a lot is overstating it, but you see more shots trickle through a goalie than you used to. So that feels like it's an equipment thing.
Yeah. We should point out,
fine.
You know, like, this big drop we're talking about, like, 4 or 5 years ago, it was 9.10. Now it's 9.05. So that's half a percentage, right? I mean, we're talking one extra goal for every 200 shots. So we're talking one extra goal every 7 games or so.
Right.
So this isn't a massive difference. And in fact,
but if you go back to 15-16, the average save percentage was 9.15.
Right.
So, like, to be down 10 points, and again, if you really want to contextualize it, last week we were saying, oh, Martin Jones hasn't been that bad. He's like a 9.01 goalie or whatever. Yeah. Where 7 years ago, if you said, oh, this guy's a 9.01 goalie, people would have been like, how's he still in the fucking league?
Yep.
And now we're saying, well, like, he hasn't been great, but, like, that's acceptable. And it's true. Mm-hmm. So, like, that alone tells you how much, like, standards have changed in just 7 years.
Yep.
And then my last theory on this, expansion. There's now, you know, like it used to be, there were like 70, 75 goalies maybe who would get ice time in the NHL. And now it's like 80, mm-hmm. 82, 83, something like that. And, you know, if you just let in like 5 goalies who previously had been on the fringes of the league and let them stop X number of pucks, they're going to maybe allow one every extra 200 shots, like you're saying.
Yep.
Now that, and especially because teams are like I guess Seattle specifically was a bad expansion team. They yeah. didn't get a lot of saves and whatever.
And that would be the interesting counter to that is that theoretically you would say, yes, you've let 4 or 5 or 6 goalies into the league that wouldn't have been good enough before, but also how many forwards are now in the league that wouldn't have been good enough and how many defensemen that wouldn't have been good enough. And,
yeah,
and
for sure.
Shouldn't that counter out? But the flip side of that is, and this has also been advanced as a theory, is we continue to move away from not just the enforcer era, which I think we can all say is over, but even the fourth line grinder era, like the idea that you just have 4 bangers on your fourth line who aren't expected to ever contribute offensively, is fading. So yes, in theory, the forward talent is worse, but teams are making a conscious choice to put better players in the lineup, which I know sounds obvious, but it took us a while to get there. So maybe that is countering it out. What I find really fascinating about this, and look, my shtick here is I think pretty well known in that I've for a long time been banging the drum. We need more offense. I don't think we have enough offense yet. I get frustrated when people say, you know, they want to hang the mission accomplished banner and you know say it's great. I think as much fun as we're all having with, you know, 6.5 goals instead of 6, I think 7 is even better. I think 7.5 would be fun as hell. But all right, at the same time, I can accept that, you know, I'm happy to see the numbers going up, but I'm a skeptic. And part of the reason I'm skeptical is because the league hasn't done anything that you can point to and say, this is the change. We've seen it all around in other sports. In football, you know, famously, there was one playoff game where the defensive techniques overwhelmed the offense and the NFL changed the rules going forward. And they've had record offense ever since and all the ratings and everything go with it. We're seeing it in baseball right now, where baseball is having a crisis, not so much of offense, but of entertainment. And baseball, the only sport that's up its own behind more than hockey about tradition and, you know, the way we've always done thing, is making a bunch of forward-looking significant changes to get the game back to being fun to watch. And hockey never does that. Hockey just tweaks and tinkers and says, well, we can't make any big changes because this is how we've done it and all of this stuff. So I'm always skeptical of it. Now, having said that, a year ago, 2 years ago, when we saw this trend kind of start to kick in, I remember looking at it and saying, you know what? As great as this is and as fun as it is that we have 100-point guys again and 50-goal guys and a 60-goal guy, a lot of it you looked at, and my theory was this is the COVID effect. It was the fact that when you looked at in a typical NHL season, we saw about 70, 75 goalies get in. And in last year, the full season of the COVID era, it was more like 80, 85 because guys were missing time. And if you just looked at those 10 extra goalies, that kind of accounted for the difference. That these guys, you know, A, they stunk. You know, B, they were probably being put in bad situations where they shouldn't have been playing. And you could just kind of explain it that way. Now we're into this year. No more COVID in the sense of having big impact on rosters. And yet the trend has continued. So maybe my skepticism, maybe my pet theory is being disproven in real time, which would be great news. It would be great if this was something more sustainable and not just an artifact of a weird blip in NHL history.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to leave it because we are like a third of the way through the season. So
I get the last thing to say is, and again, the skeptic in me, it has felt like the last few years we've always had this discussion a month or two in, and I'm always sitting there going, yeah, but it always tightens up as the season goes on.
Yep. That's not true.
But if I understand it, like, well, it has been true, but last year it didn't really happen that way.
Right.
Which again is good news, right? That, you know, the theory has always been as the playoff races get closer and coaches spend more time with their systems and everything, everybody focuses on, hey, let's play a 1-1 game, get to overtime, let the loser point fairy visit us and we go from there. And that 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, did seem to happen, but the last couple years it hasn't. So again, good news. Maybe this is more sustainable than we think.
Yeah. I hope so. It's, you know, hockey's more fun when there's the occasional 9-8 game where you can laugh at everybody involved.
And it's, you know, it's not just the 9-8 games. It's the comebacks. It's feeling like when your team's down 2-0 that the game isn't over, or even 3-0 that you don't feel like you need to turn the game off. It's fun. And look, I'm simplistic, right? This is my dumb caveman sports brain. But yeah, it's more, you know, people go like, oh, so is it more fun when guys are scoring 50 goals instead of 48? Yeah, actually it is. Like, it's more fun when guys are getting 100 points rather than 90 or whatever it is. Yeah. It just is. I'm sorry.
Sure.
And, you know, that's cool. And for years, we just wrote that off. For years, we were like, oh, I guess the Brock Richard winner is going to have 42 goals this year. Seems fine. Seems normal. Yeah, it's way better when, you know, even if the numbers are going up everywhere and it's not really given any one team or style an advantage, just big numbers more fun.
Yeah. Right. I just pulled up Micah's chart of like goal scoring by tenths of the season. And it seems like it doesn't really drop that much from the start of the year to the end of the year. Really started in about 17-18, which is when a lot of these trends of like more expected goals, more empty netters, that kind of thing. Like all of that seems to have started around 17-18.
Okay.
And I wonder what happened that year. Like, can you go back and maybe find like, oh, that's the year they tweaked whatever, goalie pad sizes or something like that, maybe.
The one that did seem to help far more than we thought is the slashing crackdown, what was so interesting about that is when that happened, that wasn't a let's create offense change. That was a player safety change, right? Like,
yes.
Like Sidney Crosby slashed Mark Mathot and, you know, like knocked the tip of his finger off. And it was like, all right. And then that got the discussion going, and then you're looking at it going like, why is that a legal play to just whack someone in the hands? And so they cracked down on that more because it was about safety. It was about preventing injuries. Yeah. And yet I don't think we realize how ingrained that had become in playing defense and in the sense of disrupting offense, that when you let these skill guys be able to skate through without thinking they're going to get cracked on the thumb or the finger, it maybe has had an impact. So again, like, that would be very NHL if the one change they made that really helped was accidental, but we'll take it. Can't complain.
Yep. Hey, speaking of injuries, the Colorado Avalanche, maybe, like, I'm sure somebody has had more injuries, including injuries to, like, important players.
Mm-hmm.
But this is crazy. Like, if you go on their hockey reference page, there are 11 guys listed as injured right now. Some of those are, like, day-to-day or whatever. But a lot of them are 4 to 6. Nathan MacKinnon added to the pile yesterday. He's out 4 weeks. Shane Bowers is in the middle of being out 6 weeks. Bowen Byram is week to week. Darren Helm is practicing in a non-contact sweater, but no timetable for his return. He's been out since October 11th. Gabriel Landeskog is expected to return at the beginning of January.
Yeah.
Nathan MacKinnon, like I said, 4 weeks. Josh Manson, week to week as of like a week ago. Valeri Nichushkin recently returned to skating and could be back soon, but he's been out since October 28th. Evan Rodriguez out 2 to 4 weeks since November 26th. So, like, this is crazy how many guys get hurt, but how many times in recent years have we said, like, oh, but, like, MacKinnon missed 15 games last year and Makar missed 12 and... You know, you can go down the list, and this just feels like it's kind of like a thing for them. Every year, somebody's missing a sixth of the season. Like, important players are always missing a sixth of the season.
And, yeah, and you wonder how much of it is, I mean, A, bad luck is probably the key here.
Sure.
But also that the Avalanche are so good that they, in theory, know they're locked into the playoffs, so can they give a little bit extra time? Can they be a little more proactive on this versus a team that was, you know, right around the bubble? Although the Avalanche are right around the bubble. They're in fourth place in the division right now, but they're still the Avalanche. Like, I've been putting them near the top of my power rankings all year, and people get mad at me. They're like, oh, they're 13 and 10. How can you rank them ahead of Winnipeg? And I'm like, yeah, because I think they're better than Winnipeg, and I think they're more likely to win the Stanley Cup than Winnipeg. And
again, like, they're hanging around despite the fact that half of their best players are injured.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we should point out there are a ton of injuries, but none of these guys are expected to be season ending or anything like that. These guys are coming back, I guess. But yeah, it's the longest list in the league. Maybe Washington would be the other team.
Washington, for sure. But what I'm saying is, like, if you go back to even, like, last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Taves missed a bunch of games. MacKinnon missed a bunch of games. Landeskog only played 51 last year. Nichushkin only missed 20. Like, Sam Girard missed 15. Like, almost every good player on their team missed significant time. Like, the guy who was in the lineup most often was Cale Makar, and he missed 5.
Mm-hmm.
So... not that that's, like, a huge problem or whatever, missing 5 games, but, like, it just goes to show you that, like, there's always somebody of great importance injured until you get to the playoffs.
Right.
And then they're all like, I'm actually 100% fine and never, and always have been.
And at that point, you know, is it actually better to have Nathan MacKinnon with 60 games of wear and tear versus 80-something?
Good point.
I'm not remotely concerned about the Avalanche. Now, we have been down this road with really good teams in the past, the Lightning a few years ago, the Golden Knights last year, where you're all year long, you're like, yeah, they're going to make the playoffs. And then suddenly you get to the last month and you're like, oh crap, like, they're still in a fight.
The playoffs.
And then they don't make it. But I'm not anywhere close to there with the Avalanche, even though
no.
you know, purely by points, they're eighth, tied for eighth in the conference, tied with Calgary, 1 point behind Nashville, but they play fewer games and everything. They'll be okay. And then even if, you know, again, this is the lesson we've learned from the Lightning over the years. Doesn't matter where you finish. Oh, they're not going to get home ice advantage. So what? The Lightning happily finish third every year and then come out of the division. And I'm sure the Avalanche aren't exactly tearing their hair out over whether they're going to have home ice against Dallas or whoever they end up playing. They'll be fine.
Yeah, especially because my big theory on the Western Conference is that it's kind of bad.
Mm, interesting. Does that have does that link at all with the fact that an expansion team is, I think, second? Are they? Yeah. Oh, they've fallen back behind Winnipeg. But yeah.
Well, how about this? The Eastern Conference. There are five teams with a negative goal difference, okay. Including Buffalo is plus four. Isn't that funny? In the Western Conference, that number is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 teams. There's only 16 of them in the whole conference. And 9 of them have a negative goal difference.
Yep. Yeah.
And another team is a 0. So if you want to count them, there's another one. That's 10. That's mm-hmm. bad.
Yeah.
That's really bad, actually. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess the thing is, you look at it and you go, well, Calgary was supposed to be in it. They're out of a playoff spot right now. Washington or Colorado is technically in. Edmonton is like barely holding on to one, and it not by points percentage. They're not. So I don't know. I like you say, I think Colorado will be fine, but it does feel like someone's going to get left holding the bag and finishing ninth, you know? Yeah.
Especially when you look at it, you look at it and you say, "Well, you know, Seattle might make the playoffs. That's a playoff spot that wasn't." You know, Winnipeg, if they look like they're going to be back in, that's a playoff spot from last year. Don't forget Vegas; that's a playoff spot from last year.
It is
that. So that means, you know, a lot of playoff teams aren't going to make it, and you know, Nashville would be the first one everyone will point to. St. Louis has got a ground to make up. But even then, somebody else has got to miss. And unless it's LA, and LA's been fine. Like, they've been playoff worthy. You know, whether, I mean, let me put it this way. What odds would you give me if I said one of Colorado, Edmonton, Calgary will not make the playoffs this year? Like, is that 50-50 at this point? Is it?
You know,
that feels too much, right? I mean,
that does feel a bit too much. Like 60-40 that one of, or 40-60, I guess, that one of them misses.
Yeah, I still feel like I'd even go
that
higher
might
on.
Be high. I don't know.
On you know, that
I'm at betting famously.
Yeah, to flip it around. Like, I guess if we said, you know, what percentage chance that all three of Colorado, Edmonton, Calgary make the playoffs? Like 75%? I don't know.
Going into the season, I would have said, like, that's all, 98%? That's as close to a lock as you're going to get.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. Because you'd be sitting there going, like, wait, well, who's going to, in the Pacific, like, yeah, Vegas might be good, but what's going to happen? Like, what, Seattle going to magically be good? Is
right.
LA still going to be, yeah, well, those things have both happened. That's an interesting one. I wonder what's
so, okay, I'm on Money Puck right now.
Mm-hmm.
Money Puck has Calgary at almost 80% and Colorado at almost 78%.
Have Colorado at 78 to make the playoffs?
They're currently third in that division by points percentage, I think, is why.
Oof.
And then Edmonton is only at 26.4 right now. Yikes.
Oof.
I would not have guessed that.
So if you run all of those, that would tell you that the odds of all three teams making the playoffs would be 16%. If you treated them all as independent events, which they aren't quite, but that's incredibly low, and even
look at him, you know, doing that math. And is it, folks, he just magically came up with that number. I couldn't have done that with a freaking calculator.
64% for just Calgary and Colorado to both make the playoffs. So
how's he doing this?
Well, you just do 0.8 times 0.8. That's you're multiplying the percentages by each other.
What the hell? This is no magic. See, maybe this is just I'm a stupid guy or whatever, but like that was magic to me. That was the craziest shit anybody.
I'm rounding. I did sure, 0.8 times 0.8, which gives you 0.64, right? Because it's the same as 8 times 8.
Where are you getting 0.8?
Oh, you said 80% for okay, both
I get
of
it.
Them to
make. Yeah. Sure. I get it.
And then okay. I rounded Edmonton down to 25%. So sorry, Oilers fans.
That's crazy. It's about math, the Oilers. Man. Wow, 26.4%.
Yeah, that's
lower than Nashville. Lower than Nashville?
And Money Puck, right? Like I'm right. Their model does they are accounting for quality of team. They're not just purely based on the standings.
Right.
It's okay. I'm gonna check what Dom has for his.
You see, I started to do that, and then I was like, I can't get involved in like navigating the labyrinthine way you need to go through to get to that page on the Athletics.
Too much content. I hear you, man.
That's literally it. They're like, okay, we have it. You got to scroll a full page down four times and then click on Dom's picture and then find it in his past. Or like, I can't all right. get involved.
So,
in all
so
that.
Dom is significantly more optimistic. And again, this is on all three of them. Actually,
okay.
he's got the Flames at 96%, which is surprising considering they're the worst of the three purely based on points percentage.
Bank, but Oilers is no. I thought it was Oilers are worse by points percentage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
very slightly. Colorado at 92% to make the playoffs. And then Edmonton way down, but Edmonton at 64% still.
Yeah.
And as far as where that's coming from, he's got the Kings at 56. He's got the Predators at 36. He's got the Kraken only at 70, the Jets only at 80. So, I mean, it's actually, I mean, his model has got 10 or 11 teams over 50%, which is completely valid.
Like, now, hold
it
on.
It can work that way.
Let's think about it. But yeah, no, I don't know. I think that I guess I hadn't thought about it, like that the Oilers are in such jeopardy. But here we are, I guess. I don't
Man,
know. Whatever.
The Oilers missing the playoffs this year would be
funny. Extremely
disaster.
Fucking funny.
Disaster. Oh. And also extremely funny.
Oh, see, I was right. Okay, great.
Very funny.
Connor McDavid trade demand when, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, he could just wait out free agency at this point.
He's going to be close, huh?
Getting there.
All right.
Oh, did you see somebody was asking about Erik Karlsson to Edmonton? Like,
sure, why not?
Ken Holland panic move of bringing in an old guy. Like, doesn't that feel...
I think he's too good of an old guy, though. You'd need to find a way where, like, he'd need to be like, I need to get Matt Martin on this team. Accountability. Hard to play against.
You know what? That's a good point. Duncan Keith out of retirement win.
All right. Why don't we take that break, and we'll be right back.
If you have not finished your holiday shopping yet, don't panic. We've got a secret source for incredible original gifts, and that's Uncommon Goods. Uncommongoods.com has the absolute best gifts for everyone in your life. We're talking moms, dads, teens, in-laws, besties, your one and only. And it's not stuff you can find just anywhere. Uncommon Goods has unique and creative gifts, often handmade by independent artists and makers. You can skip the gifts that scream last minute and find something truly original at uncommongoods.com. Now, this is the part where the script here says I'm supposed to say, here are some of my favorite things from the site and then list some things that I've got. But I can't do that because my wife listens to the podcast, and I bought some stuff for her on the site. And if I say it right now, she's going to hear this, and it's going to ruin the Christmas surprise. So I can't tell you what I got, but I will say it was very neat, creative stuff, good stuff, good price, good quality, all of that. And it was stuff that not just would I not normally have thought of as a Christmas gift, it's stuff that I wouldn't even have thought existed. And yet, as soon as I saw it, I'm like, that's a great idea. I've got to get that. So you got to take my word on it. And if you're listening to this, honey, disregard everything I just said. You're just getting socks this year. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, often handmade in the United States. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. If you're looking for a gift, you don't have to worry about getting lost in the mail. Uncommon experiences are virtual classes, but they're more than that. They're unexpected opportunities to have fun and connect in new ways, from tarot card reading, lunar astrology charting, cooking and mixology classes, crafts, gardening, so much more. From art and jewelry to kitchen, home and bar, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. Not those same lackluster gifts that you could find just everywhere. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $2.5 million to date. So to get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/puck. That's uncommongoods.com/puck for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
This week's episode of Puck Soup is brought to you by Raycon. And folks, we're in the thick of the holiday season. You know what that comes with. It comes with travel. It comes with being stressed about, like, oh, am I getting that family recipe just right? It's being stressed about all the freaking Karens at the mall. You know what I'm talking about, folks? And one thing you don't want to stress about, on top of all that other stuff, is getting the right gift. And so here's what I'm going to recommend to you. Premium audio products from Raycon, okay? That's because their wireless earbuds, headphones, and speakers offer premium sound, useful features, an almost custom comfortable fit, and up to 54 hours of battery life. That is a lot of battery life. And as the person gifting them, you're going to really like that they start at half the price of other premium audio brands. Now look, they sent me a pair of Raycon earbuds quite a while ago, and boy, they're great. They stay real snug in your ears, unlike some other brands I could mention. You know, they do really last. I wouldn't have guessed 54 hours, but that does feel right now that they say that. They do last a long time, and they sound great too. Like, you know, whether you're listening to certain hockey podcasts you love so much, this one, or, you know, music, whatever, it all sounds really, really good. So whether you're buying for, you know, your mom, your dad, your boyfriend, your wife, your coworker for the Secret Santa, everybody's going to love Raycon because everybody likes listening to stuff. You know what I'm talking about? Everybody likes music. Everybody likes their podcasts, whatever. And so here's what's going to make it really nice and easy for you. For the next month, Raycon will have a countdown to Christmas with a new pop-up flash deal for you to take advantage of every single day. And the deal today, it says right here, the Work Earbuds Classic. That's 20% off the Work Earbuds. So, look, you want some earbuds, this is the time to go. Now, you, I guess, have to keep in mind that is today only, Wednesday, December 7th. That's the only day they're going to have this deal. But they'll have similarly good deals, for the next rest of the month. So you can't beat that. Okay. Let's get down to brass tacks here, folks. From the 13th to the 20th, you get free express shipping on orders over $85 when you use the code HOLIDAY. How do you get to $85? You could buy, I don't know, an everyday speaker and a pair of everyday earbuds. That'll get you there. Pair of everyday headphones. That'll get you there. Earbuds and accessories. That'll get you there. There's so many ways you can get to $85 very, very easily, folks. So what you're going to want to do right now is go to buyraycon.com/puck to get 15% off site-wide with the code HOLIDAY plus free shipping. That's code HOLIDAY at buyraycon.com/puck for 15% off your Raycon purchase. buyraycon.com/puck. Okay, we're back. And I guess let's start this off by this guy. He writes for ESPN. His name's like Gronk Gronkowski.
Cool.
He had a list of coaches on the hot seat, basically. But like where every coach in the league ranked, I guess, is basically the best way to say it. And at the tippy top of his list with
the burning up column.
The burning up. That's right. I was scrolling. I was a little lost looking for it there. Bruce Boudreaux, Vancouver Canucks. I don't think anybody's surprised by that. Dallas Eakins, Anaheim Ducks. I don't think anybody's surprised by that. Although that he kind of indicated, old Gronk did, that this is more of a off-season move, maybe.
Yeah, I think
if
that that's
keep going like, in this direction.
The Ducks are so terrible, and yet Pat Verbeek doesn't seem to have. And the explanation for that, because I've been wondering. Like, how bad does a team have to be before you fire the coach? Especially a coach that the GM himself didn't hire. Eric Stevens had a piece where he was like, look, Pat Verbeek is focused completely on player development right now, and the young guys in Anaheim are developing well.
They're playing.
Everyone else stinks, but as long as like Zegras and guys like that continue to look good, Aikens is safe for the year and then almost certainly gone after that, you would imagine. But
And then the other two coaches here. Well, let's go with the last one first. Here is DJ Smith from the Ottawa Senators, a guy we brought up on a recent ish yep. episode about, like, do they do something here?
It's a good coach. He got the vote of confidence, but I mean, they just can't keep losing. And
now, let me ask you this: is he a good coach?
I think he's a good coach. In the sense that I don't think he's, I think roster construction is much more the issue here. But I don't think he's such a good coach that you can't possibly make a move here. Like, this isn't a case where you're like, we can't let this guy go. I think he will continue his career.
I think he's a perfectly okay coach, and that's about as far as I'm willing to go.
He's a guy that will, you know, if he gets fired in Ottawa, he'll go and become either an assistant in the NHL somewhere or an AHL coach, do that for a couple of years, and then his name will percolate up for, you know, future opportunities.
All right. And then this last guy here on the burning up section of this, Gerard Gallant from the New York Rangers. Now, remember how much shit me and you got for suggesting that?
Let's be honest. It was you. I was not
sure.
You had to sell me on it, and you know, I think I remained partially sold, but still. Yeah.
Well, again, mine was just like, if you're betting on a dark horse candidate to get shit canned this year, or be the first coach to get shit canned, dark horse candidate, this was my guy.
Because you're looking for a team that is going to underachieve expectations, and you saw all the warning lights on the dashboard for the Rangers potentially being that team.
That's right. And what's interesting is they're bad in a way I didn't expect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they had a nice little run where their underlying numbers looked very good to start the year and have just kind of slowly declined. And do I want to advance the theory that part of that is like they played like the Ducks and the Sharks and the Blue Jackets and the Islanders and the... well, the Islanders, when they were bad, I guess I should say, and the Coyotes and the Flyers. They played a bunch of those teams early in the season. Now, they also played like Boston and Colorado and stuff like that. But my point being, it's like, remember last year when they got like insanely good 5-on-5 numbers for a while, and then you looked and they played the New Jersey Devils 17 times in a row?
Crappy Devils. Yeah.
Those were the days, huh?
Mm-hmm.
But, the Rangers are like, are they out shooting teams on a regular basis? No, but like they're doing it more often than they did it last year, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, like, it seems like a situation where the stars aren't being stars. Like, Panarin's kind of had an up and down season a little bit. I mean, I guess he's over a point a game, but like, who isn't these days, right? The kids aren't coming along, and if I may quote the goalie himself, goalie's been shit.
Yeah. By his standards.
By his standards, right.
There's lots of, you know, 9-10, which, as we just said, is above league average. There's lots of teams that would love to have that level of goaltending, but for a guy who looked like he was the new Dominic Hasek coming into the year, that's not great.
Yeah, 896 over his last five starts.
Oof.
Not going to get it done for anybody, let alone a team like the Rangers that kind of relied on little bit smoke and mirrors.
And those five games against LA, Edmonton, New Jersey, Ottawa, St. Louis. So really only one A-plus like offensive team there and only one especially good team there. So
yeah, the other thing is the power play, which one of the best in recent memory, on a little under the league average, 21%. The league average is closer to 23%.
Yep.
Which
is
so
what that's what everybody said going into the season, right? Is what would happen if the special teams weren't amazing and the goaltending wasn't amazing. Could they fix the 5-on-5 game to compensate for that?
Not enough, it looks like. Because I would yeah. argue that they kind of sort of have fixed yes. the 5-on-5
exactly.
game.
Exactly. And but yet...
The thing is, they were so bad at it for so much of last year that, like, kind of sort of fixing it, like, you're still kind of going to be in that, like, mushy middle of the league where you're just kind of like, oh, everybody's maybe not great, you know? And, mm-hmm. like, we say all this, the Rangers are, by points percentage, they're below Florida and Montreal, like... Florida is, we'll talk about them in a minute, I guess, because they're another team that's in the same boat. But I don't know. You look at the Rangers and it seems like every week now there's a new, like, what's wrong with these guys? Something like this. Do we have to make a trade? Do we have to fire the coach? And I don't know that doing that fixes anything. Like, you know,
I can't see how it does. I mean,
like, you bring in Barry Trotz, is everything magically fixed overnight? Maybe because he's like the guy who fixes goal or makes goalies look great.
I guess that's the move that you would make, right? Because what I was going to say is, like, Gerard Gallant is a good coach. And I said DJ Smith's a good coach, and you were like, yeah, but is he? And then I was sort of like, oh, you know, he's not bad. Gerard Gallant is a really good coach. He's a really good coach. He's had great success in the league. I really like him. I think, like, Who are you going to bring in that's better? But maybe it's Trotz.
Would be Barry Trotz, and that's pretty much it. Like, unless you're getting Mike Babcock out of fake retirement.
That ain't. Yeah, that's could have had that guy a year and a half ago when you hired Gallant. So, what's the thing with the Rangers is because I in my Monday power rankings that everybody reads because it's mandatory. You're not allowed to listen to this podcast if you don't read everything that both of us write.
That's right.
You, in fact, by clicking the play button, you have legally warranted that you've
binding contract.
But I wrote about like some early season stories that I'm not buying quite yet. And one of them was the Rangers. I said, you know, I can't see this team not making the playoffs. And somebody, I can't remember if it was in the comments or on Twitter, was like, all right, you're saying that they're going to make the playoffs. Who are they going to pass that's ahead of them right now?
Right.
Because they're 10th right now. So they need to pass two teams. All right. I feel like we can all say Detroit would be one of those teams. It, even though, I mean, Detroit is ahead of them with games in hand. But I think we of all the teams that are in the playoffs in the East right now, Detroit looks fake.
Totally fair.
They got to pass New Jersey? But no, I mean.
No.
They got to pass Carolina? The Islanders?
Behind
the Islanders are maybe in range. Pittsburgh, who knows? Pittsburgh is all over the map, up and down, but they've got to, it's really got to be one of Pittsburgh or the Islanders because, you know, you look at the Atlantic, Boston, Toronto, Tampa, Florida is one of those teams that's ahead of it, but you figure Florida's going to find it. So there's not going to be two wild cards in the Metro, you would think, and we can get to Florida. But if there's not two wild cards in the Metro, then you've got to pass one of the Islanders or Pittsburgh really are your only two options.
Yeah, again, the Canadiens are 1 point back of the Rangers with a game in hand. Oof. The Montreal Canadiens, another team nobody thought was going to be any good this year.
Yeah, and again, like
and frankly, they're not that good.
They're not. And again, this is all based on we're writing off a Detroit Red Wings team that's got a 620 points percentage. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean it's tough, but the fascinating thing with the Rangers is the one of the subplots to the season has been that they're on everyone's list as the favorites to get Patrick Kane. Wait until a little bit closer to the trade deadline, accrue some cap space, and boom, they go get Patrick Kane, reunite him with Panarin. He gets to go to a big market, chase a cup. And then either that's his new home or he can go back to Chicago or he becomes free agent, whatever it is. It felt like it made a ton of sense. Now you're looking at it going like, are they even going to be good enough to get Patrick Kane to want to go, let alone for it to make sense for them to give up futures for him? But I mean, does Patrick Kane want to go to a playoff bubble team like remembering that he has full control of his destination. Is he want to go help them try to jump from ninth to eighth, knowing he could miss the playoffs? I don't know. Not necessarily.
Yeah. It's really tough just because, like, again, you know, the expectations were so high. But I do want to read this this quote from Gronk's story. Do I think Gallant is on the hot seat? No, I don't. I think Chris Drury is going to be able to talk sense into James Dolan. I wouldn't be so confident
That's a scary sentence if you're a Rangers.
That was from an unnamed NHL source.
Because that's always been the thing. Like Dolan, like you know better than I do, but Dolan is like in would it be that far off to say that he's kind of like considered the Eugene Melnyk of the NBA?
No, because he spends money.
Fair. Okay. But as far as just being like a crappy, hands-on, embarrassing owner.
Insanely hands-on owner, yes.
And absolutely. Yet, it often surprises basketball fans to find that as purely as a Rangers fan, he's been a great owner because he's generally been hands-off and, again, spends money. And he's so busy screwing up the Knicks that he tends to leave the Rangers alone. And then that kind of changed a couple years ago when there was the whole thing with the Tom Wilson and the letter and all of this. And at that point, like a lot of Rangers fans are like, oh God, please don't let James Dolan remember that he owns a hockey team and start Knicksing it up.
And, yeah.
We'll see.
We'll see. Yeah.
Because the Knicks stink always.
Truth. Yeah. But yeah, I just think if you're counting on literally anybody to talk sense into Dolan, that's not a bet I'd be making, brother. That is a real tough one for me.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So let's move on to the Florida Panthers, who our old buddy Gronk kind of had pretty low on the list for hot seat, but on Twitter, and you know, how far does that go, right? But on Twitter, I've seen more and more people being like, I don't know, I think this is fucking not working out with Paul Maurice.
Yeah, but I mean, it's he's just started.
He just started, for sure.
They made this decision, and this is one of those things where GMs, owners, anyone, like, people have a real problem admitting they're wrong. Like, there's the concept of, like, the sunk cost and there's all of this stuff. But, I mean, imagine you let, you know, imagine how that would play out. Like, we had a Jack Adams finalist. We let him go. He went to New Jersey. New Jersey immediately got way better. And we brought in the veteran guy who knows how to win, and we're not winning with him. Now, everything I just said is true regardless of what you do. But to just put a spotlight on it like that, I don't know.
Yeah.
But that was a lot of us in the offseason kind of went, what are they doing?
For sure. Yeah, I think I was like the leader of that little band.
Probably were.
I mean, I've said this before. He's just like the most mediocre coach I can possibly imagine in the NHL. You know, mm-hmm. like the very definition of a guy that just hangs around kind of inexplicably. There's a lot of coaches like that in the NHL. I don't know that there's anybody more than Paul Maurice.
Yeah. And we should say, like, Aaron Ekblad hurt for a chunk of the season.
Yeah, and Bobrovsky, Alexander Barkov, he's like an .880 goalie.
Well,
and, yeah, Barkov's missed some time for sure.
Yeah. I mean, can we say Spencer Knight's the number one goalie now? Like
he recently passed Bobrovsky in terms of the number of games he appeared in. But
they're still kind of a 1-1A, but
no, it's not even that. It's like they're both kind of, you know, Knight started 14 games and Bobrovsky started 12. Like maybe you say in the last like week and a half it's become the Spencer Knight show, which it definitely should be, but Bobrovsky's contract alone dictates that they have to give him X number of starts because you can't have a $10.5 million backup or whatever the number is.
Yeah. Again, though, I mean, sunk cost, right? I mean, you're paying him whether you play him one game or 50, but you're right. I mean, the pressure to...
When's the last time you saw a guy with an absolutely fucking horrendous contract that, like, everybody is like, this? Not only is the contract bad, but this guy, like, is... outright, he stinks, right? Mm-hmm. How often have you seen that guy consigned to, like, backup goalie status, fourth line role, what, like, yeah, you know, in and out of the press box? Like, it never fucking happens.
Other than the guys who are, like, fake injured, retired, you almost never see. Jeff Skinner comes to mind, and that was a big story in Buffalo of, why are you doing this to this guy who makes so much money? You've got to fix him. That should be the priority. And
yeah.
So yeah, no, it's a fair point. Florida still scares me as a fan of a team division.
They definitely should.
I don't want to be.
Yeah, they've outshot their opponents by 226 games.
Ooh,
that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's good.
So, but,
and Matthew Tkachuk's been fantastic when he's not sticking guys. Like,
and even then, like, that's the Matthew Tkachuk experience. He's gonna do shithead stuff out there.
Yeah.
And he's 100 shots on goal this season.
He's been great. And, like, I think maybe, and I'm not going to say this was an under-considered story, because I did see lots of people flagging this in the offseason. But, you know, you looked at that trade as Huberto for Tkachuk, and you kind of went, yeah, you know what? I like that. Panthers got a guy who's younger. They got him cheaper.
Better.
You know, cheaper, better.
Yeah.
Does more things. All of that. But... Did we underplay the Mackenzie Weegar factor and what that did to Florida's? It's not like he's gone to Calgary and set the world on fire, but the fact that
he's been good,
Florida,
was their problem for sure in Calgary.
The fact that Florida is sitting there going, you know, there goes our number two defenseman, and didn't really replace him. And then obviously, as soon as Eric Ekblad misses time, that's no longer a playoff worthy defense.
Right.
So maybe maybe that's the issue, like, in which case
I don't know. They were, yeah. I think the issue is, like, they, although apart from Barkov and Lundell, I think is still hurt. But, like, they looked horrible against the Jets last night. I watched a good chunk of that game, and they were just, as a team, they just didn't look that good. Now, they put up 41 shots on a goal, but I didn't watch that game going, now this is a team that's beating the hell out of a Winnipeg Jets team that's just Connor Hellebuck and Kyle Connor.
Yep.
You know, and Mark Scheifele, I guess. But, boy, Hellebuck, what a season he's having. Holy shit, man.
Yeah.
Stopped 39 last night. Boy, oh, boy. Anyway, one last team that kind of feels like they're maybe in a little bit of deep shit is the St. Louis Blues. Just a little bit. Just a little bit of deep shit.
Yeah, but, just a little. I haven't checked lately. Are they on a five-game winning streak or a five-game losing streak?
Right, you know, now? It's funny you say that. I think it's neither. I think they're now doing.
They
the thing
just right. won.
They won
to
last
snap
night,
a four-game.
They lost
streak.
Last night, didn't they? Or
no, they beat the Islanders last night to snap a four-game
right,
losing
right,
streak.
Right, right. I was thinking of that game against the Rangers, but that was on Saturday.
Yep. 7-4 win.
Yeah. So as I was, remember, I was like not home at all last week. I watched the only NHL I watched during that time off was I watched the first period of Blues Rangers at a bar where that wasn't like the main thing that was on TV, because the Michigan game was on or whatever. So that was my experience. But hey, do you want to guess the last time the St. Louis Blues gave up less than four goals in a game?
How long has it been since?
It's been I don't know how many days this is, but it's been since November 21st.
Holy smokes. But Ryan, if you did watch the games, you'd know Jordan Binnington is still
there. It's not his fault.
Yeah, my God. Look, this is what? Eight games. 6-5, 4-4, 6-6, 6-4. And by the way, I should say that win over the Islanders last night, they go up 5-1. Midway through the third period, give up three goals to close it to 5-4, and then score two empty netters.
Yep.
So, I mean, a win's a win, but very nearly
seven goals is seven
disaster.
Goals, yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, no, they're... They're in a lot of trouble, I think, in terms of the way they're playing right now. Because even, like, look, even if we want to give Jordan Binnington the most popular player in the NHL today, if we want to give him the benefit of the doubt and Thomas Greiss to, you know, hey, go nuts. The Blues fans are right insofar as the way this team is playing is scary bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have two wins, only one in regulation in their last eight games. And, yeah, they're giving up a ton of shots. I don't know.
The penalty killing is historically bad, or on pace to be historically bad.
On pace, yeah,
like, for sure. Like in the mid to low 60s.
A shade under 65 right now. Right. Is that good?
So basically, if when every time they take a penalty, the other team turns into like the mid-80s Oilers for 2 minutes.
Right.
That feels like something you shouldn't necessarily do, especially when, you know, you have Craig Berube as your coach. So I don't think going out and playing penalty-free is always an option. By the way, Berube, the comments on Jordan Binnington.
Yeah.
Was pretty funny, eh? Where he's like, knock it off, stop the puck.
Maybe try playing goal is right. Like, you know, look, I think my opinion on Jordan Binnington is well known, and people are going to say, like,
love the guy.
Yeah, he's cool. He's never done anything wrong. No, like, he's a huge shithead and a crybaby, and especially on the ice, a fucking asshole. Everybody agrees with it. Like, at this point, how could you possibly disagree with that? Now, you can be a guy who thinks that's cool and good, right? Like, you can say, yes. I like that he plays like this. I like that Matthew Tkachuk plays like he plays. But with a goalie, that shit drives me crazy because you're not allowed to hit this guy.
Right.
If this was some, you know, fourth line guy who was playing like this, well, I guess the big body check behind the net, that would just be part of the game or whatever. But like extending his glove or doing the thing where you go, oh, you want to fight me? You want to fight me?
Oh, it was Jason Zucker, right? That he like just hit him in the face on the way by.
Yep.
And then
if that was any other player
scored on by him.
Immediately gets scored on by him and pulled from the game. And then he talks shit to the bench on the way out of the building.
He does like the Dan Cloutier. You fucking
stink.
Like, And did you see the shot of like Zucker's reaction on the bench?
Yeah, being like
very funny. Like he's making like Larry David face. Like okay,
yeah, this
buddy.
He's an 890 goalie right now. And again, if you want to say, well, the team in front of him stinks, blah blah blah. Okay, sure, but like 890 is bad no matter what. Mm-hmm. Like, at what point does it tip into this is just exclusive? Not even exclusively. This is at least partly his fault. I don't know. Like for me, like I'm kind of just waiting for someone to be like, I don't care that he's a goalie. I'm gonna beat the shit out of this guy.
Well, the guy starts so many fake fights that
somebody. That's what I'm saying. Like somebody at some point has to call him on it.
Yeah, you would think.
You would certainly think. But yeah, I don't know. Like. Again, do I think the Blues are like in kind of any existential trouble here with this like playoff race or whatever? Maybe. I mean, they're two games below 500 with a negative 20 goal difference.
Yeah.
So,
but they're in the West, which is
right.
The saving grace. This is, you know, if people are like, well, wait a second, why are you panicking about the Rangers but not the Blues?
Yeah,
they're in the West.
Now, on the other hand, though, there are two games or there are 1 point and a 20 standings points percentage wise, 20 of them behind the Vancouver Canucks, a team that everybody agrees stinks. So I don't know. And if that's the case, like
where did Grog have Berube on his?
You know, I closed that window. Let me see if I can find it again.
I still got it here. Let's.
Oh, here
he's got him on centrally hot, depending on the week, alongside Dean Evason and John Hines.
Two other coaches in the central. Yeah.
Yeah, he says Berube was just handed a contract extension last season. He signed through 2025. So that makes it tough.
Makes it tough to move on from that guy. And I don't know, you know, it definitely seems like the more likely outcome is that you trade Tarasenko and O'Reilly.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of try to build it around your Thomas and Buchnevich and what's that other guy? He's not doing so Kyrou. Good this year. Jordan Kyrou, that's right.
I had the Blues as like a sneaky high team on my tank index where it was like who's best positioned to tank. Not saying who's going to do it or who's going to finish last, but because they've got those two guys you mentioned, Tarasenko and O'Reilly, like there's a lot of teams where you go, yeah, they should tank, but what would they even do? Like how do you get worse? And St. Louis has got two pretty good players that they could move and get worse.
Yeah, another way they could get worse is to start Binnington more.
No, if you watch the games, you know.
By the way, I said Kyrou has been bad this season. He definitely started out bad, and now he's gotten insanely hot. He's got like 10 goals this season. Yeah, he was a point a game in November. So, but he only had 3 points in all of October. That's why I had the perception that he hadn't played that well this season. Because for like 8 games, he was bad at the beginning of it. All right, let's stay in the Central for a minute. Jason Robertson has become MVP candidate guy. Should have been one last year, but
he's so good.
To Connor McDavid, he's
so good and so fun. Unfortunately, he ran into the buzzsaw that was the Toronto Maple Leafs last night.
Matt Murray, kind of
there goes the scoring streak. Sorry, buddy. Go sit on the bench with the Devils win streak and.
That's
while
right.
While the Leafs hang out with Brock Lesnar and just wonder who's next.
That's right. But yeah, he's been fucking unbelievable.
He's amazing. He's so good.
Oh my God, he rocks.
By the way, good luck to every NHL coach who's, after Jason Robertson wins the Hart and the Art Ross this year, convincing everyone they got to work hard in training camp. Like, come on, guys, this is important, is it now? You know what? I think I'm going to have a contract dispute until
Jason Robertson, like leaning against the wall next to the bike rack, smoking a cigarette during lunch, whatever. Yep. Who gives a shit?
Aren't you supposed to be in class? Nah, you don't have to go. They can't make you.
They can't make you. That's right.
He is.
I'm going to go to McDonald's for lunch. You want to come, brother?
I did a piece last week. The 10 guys that everyone likes in the NHL.
Yep.
I feel like Jason Robertson was the only guy nobody was mad at me for having on that list. Like everybody I put on that list, there's always some weirdo comes out who's like, no, this weird fan base hates that guy. Everybody was like, yeah, Jason Robertson rules. That guy rocks.
Yeah, he does. There's no two ways about it.
There's nothing more fun than like dominant professional athletes who look like they're 13 years old.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Like, it's fantastic. It's the best combo, and that guy is just... I mean, even last night, like, I mean, yeah.
I gotta say,
the Leafs won and got a shutout. The Leafs got speed-bagged by the Stars last night, and they goalied him. He was fantastic in that game, too.
Yeah, and I don't blame his mom for rocking the Robertson jersey and being like, I guess I'll put on the Leafs hat.
Yeah.
She's back, honestly, winner in this one, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly, you know, she's... We all we can all see which way that pendulum is tilting. So let's
not a jury in the world could convict her of being like, oh no, there's one son that definitely deserves a little more attention here.
You know, but
one who's the best in the world.
But you know, she's a mom and she loves both her sons equally, both Jason and Jason's brother. They're both great.
Chase
it and not Jason.
That's right. We mentioned the Leafs. We got to talk about Mitch Marner is up to a 20-game point.
20 games. A team
That's
record.
A lot. Yeah, now see, I don't love it when they're like, you got to tune into this guy. This guy's about to set a team record. Yeah. I don't give a shit about that, man.
But when the team is 100 years old, and I will say,
I understand.
Because we mentioned last week that like the whole idea of, you know, a record is only a record if you actually had heard of it before it changed. Right. I do remember Ed Olczyk chasing and tying Daryl Sittler's record.
And when did he do that? Like 1991?
Before then, 89.
Even worse for me. Then.
So it's like, I mean,
5 years old.
Right. It just shows that this is, even through the crazy 80s and 90s and everything, like scoring records are cool. The problem is you like you look at like a list, you know, they throw up on the, like, here's all the all-time, and you're like, oh, wow, he's six behind Patrick Kane and he's three behind Sidney Crosby. Right. And this is great. And then you go, oh, wait a second. There's a thing there that says like since 1995, like what's the actual record? And then it's like, yeah, well, Wayne Gretzky scored like 7 years in a row. So
right.
It's like one of those completely unbreakable Gretzky records and like all these guys. So, but it's still, it is cool. Now, did you see, and did you have thoughts on the game? I can't remember who they were playing, but it was the game where he got to 18, I think, where.
No, I was out of town for that.
That's right. You were not watching hockey. He gets to, this was either the 17th or the 18th game. And it's like at the end of the game and he doesn't have any points, but the other team's got the goalie out. And so they leave him on the ice for like 3 minutes and everyone's like passing to him and everything so that he can try to get the record. And it was actually quite entertaining because he had like two golden chances to do it. Like one where he passed when he shouldn't have and the other guy couldn't score. And then another one where, you know, he shot it down and it like ticked off the outside of the post. And then with like seconds to go, he gets a partial break and scores, which was very cool and dramatic. And also I can imagine some people being like, that's a cheap way to extend.
Yeah. This is the Phil Kessel gets one shift and gets flown out of the building on a helicopter.
It was, it was a little bit like that. Yeah. But it was still, it was one of the only entertaining, empty net goals I'll ever see. I don't know. I did not check I didn't check with Ally Afraidy to see what he thought of him, but, it was
The other thing I did want to talk about with the Toronto Maple Leafs now, they're fucking killing everybody, I think, is the general take to have with all this.
Yeah. They're
since the start of November, they are 12-1-4.
Yeah. Like, you have to go back to, they've lost one regulation game since before Halloween. They have gotten a point in every game since a loss to the Penguins on November 11th. So that is,
yeah,
whatever that is, 12 games in a row. Can't win in overtime. They stink out loud in overtime, but that's not.
They give you a point just for showing up to that.
They,
you know?
They do. And it's not the worst thing in the world because this is, you know, again, like on the one hand, you could look at the Leafs and go like, look at all those loser points. They're actually, you know, they're on a pure one loss record. They're 16-11. That's good, but it's not amazing. But the flip side is they don't play 3-on-3 in the playoffs. So if all you're worried about is the playoffs, then a team that does great in overtime, like the Florida Panthers last year, is maybe a little bit fake, and a team that doesn't do well in overtime is maybe set up well.
And also, they've
been great.
They have. And the other thing about that, though, is that means that, yeah, they don't win in overtime ever, but that means that they have 12 regulation wins in their last, 17 games.
Yeah.
Can't complain about that.
Yeah. They win in regulation, and when they lose, they get to overtime and get a point, which is what you're supposed to do. And the goaltending has been great.
Shockingly good. Yeah.
Which, again, in this weird way, the goaltending being great is obviously a good thing, and yet it's also kind of, if you're sick of the Leafs and you want to see them do poorly, that's what you focus on. Because you go, Samsonov and Murray are not going to be 925, 930 goalies all year long. And so when that comes back to earth, you know, who knows? But the thing with the Leafs is they don't give up goals. And that's some of that is the goaltending, but it's also like they're really and I know
the team defense is like the reason to have a lot of faith.
I know it's the Leafs. They were like this last year too. They were a very good defensive team last year based on the numbers. They could go all season playing like this, and people will still, if they give up one goal, people will go, yeah, same old Leafs. Can't win in the playoffs with this flashy offensive style, and not notice that Sheldon Keith has been not playing that way for a couple of years now. But again, you know what? None of it's going to matter until the playoffs. And there's a lot of season left, but it's going to be awfully hard to catch the Bruins. And if you don't catch the Bruins, hey, guess what? Great season, guys. Awesome.
That's
great. Great season. Fantastic work. You guys were amazing. Guess who's sitting there in the first round of the playoffs? It's your old pal, the Tampa Bay Lightning. And
Right.
Good luck with that.
So I just looked this up. Since the start of this streak or whatever, the hot run here, they are a 12th in the league in 5-on-5 expected goals against, which isn't like great. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, in theory, if you have Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, John Tavares is having a great season, Willie Nylander, if you have all those guys, you don't need to be like great defensively. You just need to be like perfectly all right.
And we should point out they've been doing this with their three of their best defensemen injured.
Yeah, that's
no Morgan Riley for most of it. No Muzzin for any of it. No TJ Brody's been out, so they've got guys like there was a stretch last night where they were down 5-on-3 to the Stars. Yep. For an extended period, and they had Liljegren and Sandin out there, two guys who don't kill penalties, but that's who they had to put out because they did. They lost another defenseman to injury last night. They just didn't have any penalty killing.
Those two guys, I watched the first like half of that game. Yep. Those two guys looked awesome.
And they were just, like the penalty kill, they didn't get scored on. They gave up a ton of big chances, but they were blocking shots and everything. Like it was really fascinating to watch because, I mean, these are just two guys who don't kill penalties, but they're having to kill penalties on a 5-on-3 because the Leafs, all their defensemen are out. And Brody and Riley should be back. Muzzin, probably not. Yep. But like there's a lot of room for, I know it's Toronto and people roll their eyes, but there's a lot of room for optimism there. I'm glad I didn't write any overreaction columns about how much I hated this team, like six games into the season. That, hoo-hoo.
Yeah. Again, they're just with the caveat about their defensemen. They're like a pretty good team with a lot of high-end talent, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're a pretty good team with a lot of high-end talent, you should win most nights.
Yep.
And so if you're saying we're going to add two of their top three defensemen back into the mix, they should get even better than they have been. In terms of like how they're playing on the ice, hard to be better than 12-1-4 over a 17 game stretch. But like in terms of how they're actually playing, and if they end up in the top 10 in, you know, all situations expected goals percentage by the end of the year, like once again, you just kind of have to tip your hat to them and say, yep, the Leafs are good. I don't know what to tell you.
Yep.
It's that simple. So, why don't we take another break? We'll be back and talk about a couple more pieces of news, and then that's it. Thanks. Be right back. This week's episode of Puck Soup is brought to you by Athletic Greens. And, folks, what do I always say? I say I started taking Athletic Greens because they sent it to me. And before that, I was always very skeptical. Never quite sure what kind of taking all these different supplements and pills and stuff like that, where that would get me in my life. You know what I mean? But now I've been taking it for quite a while. Now, I don't remember how long ago they sent it to me, but it was quite a while ago. And I got to say, it's good. Tastes good. That's one of my main concerns going in, right? It was surely this mix can't be good. It is good because it tastes good. So what do you get when you take one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens? It's 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and everybody's favorite adaptogens to start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, your recovery, your focus, your aging. That's a whole bunch of stuff. So you're thinking, surely there's some kind of catch with this. It can't be that healthy for you, right? Wrong. Wrong, extremely wrong. It is lifestyle friendly, whether you are keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, and less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no chemicals, no artificial anything. And you're like, well, of course, this must cost $1 million a day, right? Wrong again. You don't know anything about Athletic Greens, it sounds like, because it costs less than $3 a day. That's an investment in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit. And I guess all that good stuff I just mentioned is why Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews. That's almost as many as Puck Soup has, so you can't even imagine, you know? So, yeah, you're thinking, how do I get all this sent to me? Well, to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is go to athleticgreens.com/puck. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/puck to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. All right, we're back, and one of the last things I want to talk about here is the Brock Besser drama, or drama, depending on which side of the U.S.-Canada border you're on, which even I, as a guy who is trying to not actively seek out, ignore would be too strong a word, but not actively seek out hockey stuff, this one was all over my frickin' radar all weekend. He's going to be healthy scratched. Then he's not healthy scratched because I think it was Dakota Joshua got hurt. And then there was also the report that his agent has been given permission to facilitate a trade, which is never a sign that things are going well.
No, but he has not asked for a trade, we're told. But his agent is attempting to facilitate one, which is sounds a lot like you want a trade. And we should also mention part of the drama was... On a Saturday was the Hockey Fights Cancer, and Brock Besser lost his dad to cancer recently, so it was about him. He had some
like
family.
Very recently.
Yeah, it was, you know, not that you could be making lineup decisions based on that, especially when Bruce Boudreau's out here coaching for his job, but it was a maybe a more important game for him personally than it normally would be, and he was going to be a scratch. Like, there was no... It was only a last-minute injury, and then, of course... comes in and scores the big goal in to tie the game, and Vancouver wins. But
this is the still very much drama,
sounds
though.
Still very much sounds like he'll be on the move. And I mean, the other thing is, like, if you're not following the Canucks, A, congratulations, you're doing something right in your life. But
lucky
B,
you
you might be like, oh, is this like a, you know, classic case of a bad team, coach on the hot seat, so he picks a fight with a star player. But, like, Brock Besser has not been good this year by almost any measure. Like, he's not scoring goals. He's the metrics, whatever you want to look at, have not been good pretty consistently.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's just one of those situations where it feels like Brock Besser is never going to put it all together and totally figure it out. Because remember, coming into the year, he was like, this is the season I'm scoring 30 goals.
Yeah.
It's like, guy, I don't know, bud.
He had 29 goals as a rookie in like 60 games.
Yep.
He didn't win the Calder, right? I think he was.
But he sure didn't.
He came close.
Who did win it?
20 years old. That was what? 2000.
Barzal, yeah.
Barzal, okay. But 2018, like that, it feels like he's one of those guys where, it feels like he's younger, like in terms of, like if you told me he was in the third year of his career, I'd believe you. But this is year six for him as a full-time NHLer, and the goals have been 29, 26, 16, 23, and then 23 last year, which was the first time he played 70 games, and this year only 4 through 20, so...
Yeah, it's more a he can't stay healthy thing.
Some of it, but also, like, you know, when a guy scores 30 goals in 60 games as a rookie, you're sitting there going, we got a 40-goal guy on our hands. Maybe someday a 50-goal guy when he figures this out. And now it's starting to look like, no, he might be a 20-something goal guy, which is still has a lot of value. But that's not, you know, that's not what you signed up for. They did give him an extension. He's making $6 million for the next 2 or 3 years, which is... Yeah. If a guy can score 25 goals, that's maybe a little much, but
totally. It's like reasonable if a bit of a.
It's not a contract situation. It's
slight
just,
overpay. Yeah.
So where does he go?
I think, you know, I guess the problem is that any good team is kind of capped out and will be right, but this is a guy that I think if you look at the talent level, you would say. You know, if you put him with guys who can play and specifically, you know, who can maybe cover for him defensively, because that's like the real hole in his game, right? Like, he's a perfectly good offensive player when healthy, but defensively, not so much. And part of that is he was on the Canucks. Look at the Canucks' defensive core, right? Like their group of six defenders over the last 3, 4, 5 years, whatever you want to say. And you go, oh, well, you know, I think I figured out your problem here, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you can, you know, maybe get the Canucks to take a bad contract back and you know, it seems like maybe the front office is finally just like, yeah, you know what? Let's just try to get the, like, let's make a trade for the sake of saying, look, we made a trade. We shook things up. We recognized something needed to change. But then, like, secretly, it's a, let's trade this guy we know is pretty good for whatever we can get for him, and then kind of go into the tank where we think maybe we should have. Because remember, because that was the thing of like, some people were like, oh yeah, no, we need to trim the roster and maybe get a little worse so we can get better in the future. And then it feels like ownership was like, you're not allowed to do that.
That's always been the concern in Vancouver. And even now, like they've won two in a row. They've won 7 of their last 10, not even up to 500 yet, but you know, in range of being in the playoff hunt. So who knows where it goes. I don't know. If he gets moved, obviously the team everyone's going to think of first is Minnesota, just because he's the local
from
guy.
There.
But
yeah,
cap wise,
they would need to do a lot to make that make sense.
Elliot Friedman mentioned Washington.
Just going to say, like, the answer to me feels more like an Eastern Conference team, just because teams are always a little gun shy about trading in division or whatever. But there, you know, like there are some like okay Eastern Conference teams that might be able to make that work a little bit, like Brock Besser to the Islanders.
Yeah,
I'd like that for them. You know, again, like they would have to maybe move on from an Anthony Beauvillier, but like I don't know. Do I feel like I'd rather have Brock Besser than Anthony Beauvillier? I don't know if I do. One way or the other, you know? But if you're looking to juice your numbers or whatever, I think that would kind of work for the Islanders. And, you know, they're both the similar age, so you can kind of pitch it as making sense for everyone involved. Like if you're the Canucks, oh, we're getting a pretty good 25-year-old coming back too. It's just a change of scenery thing, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Which I don't get the sense is necessarily what their fans want. Like if they're going to move a guy, they would rather get the
nuke it,
the collection of magic boxes that could turn into something. But maybe the owner is saying, no, we don't want to get worse. I don't know. The Devils don't have cap space. Carolina could, but I don't know. We never know how Carolina thinks necessarily about players, but Brock Besser is certainly
Carolina
not a...
Carolina have cap space?
You know what? Maybe not.
I don't think they do.
They're sort of...
I don't think they do.
Pacioretty.
Because they're counting on Pacioretty coming back. And the only thing is, like, if you can trick Vancouver into taking Kotkaniemi off your hands, then you're like, okay, we're rocking and rolling.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, you're right. Then, Carolina's got a lot of cap space right now, but it's LTIR space set aside for Pacioretty. So, okay, take them off the list.
Now hear me out. The New York Rangers, finally, a guy who can put the puck in the net for them.
Yeah. Problem with the Rangers is you do that, you're out of the Patrick Kane sweepstakes.
For sure. You know, here's one that is interesting to me. And again, maybe it's not for like this year, but it's for going forward. The Buffalo Sabres.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a rebuilding team.
You maybe don't
want
to move
like
that first round pick, but
a team. No,
they got
you're not
three
giving your
seconds
first
this
pick,
year.
But,
they got 3 seconds this year. There you go. 2 seconds for Brock Besser. They don't need to make the cap room. They can just put him in the lineup, and off you go. This is a great idea by me.
I could see Detroit and even Ottawa, too, being two teams where, you know, you're not mortgaging the future for a short-term guy. Like, you're figuring he's going to be in your lineup for the next few years to come.
Now, for Ottawa, is he going to play defense or something? Like, that's their problem, right?
You're
like,
right.
they... Mm-hmm. They don't have anybody who can play defense.
But then you trade Alex DeBrincat for a defenseman. See? It's easy.
Oh, sure. That, you know what?
Pierre,
makes perfect sense.
I think, yeah, the Capitals might be the team. I guess another team that doesn't really have the cap space, you wouldn't think, assuming that they're holding out hope that Backstrom comes back. Would be interesting, though, because, I mean, those are two teams with basically identical records. Like, imagine getting called in and like, hey, man, you're out of here in Vancouver. Thank God. Where am I going? To the same team, but with worse weather. Have fun.
Also, you are never allowed to shoot at an empty net. You have to pass it to Alex Ovechkin.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, shit. That doesn't sound good to me. But, yeah, it'll be interesting. I think they do end up moving him. And then, you know, who knows? And then one last thing I wanted to talk about. So there was some, like, big report from the International Olympic Committee the other day about, like, how the Winter Olympics are going to work.
Okay.
Going forward. And basically, here's the quote. The Future Host Commission outlined proposals for future Winter Olympics. This is from, like, an NBC report. For future Winter Olympics, which included rotating hosts within a pool of cities or regions and a requirement that hosts have an average minimum temperature below freezing for snow competition venues at the time of the games over a 10-year period.
Okay.
So what that basically means is there was just a report that was like the number of places where the Winter Olympics is feasible or would be feasible for like outdoor events is like going to dwindle rapidly over the next 30 years because of global warming.
Right.
And so it is a situation where they're just going to be like, no, there are like six places that we can hold the Winter Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to do it in those six places on a rotating basis forever.
I mean, well, I was going to say, are there really that many cities that want to bid on, especially the Winter Olympics anymore? But yeah, there probably are. There always are. I mean, the rotating, yeah. The idea, like we're seeing this in the next World Cup, right? Where it's like, instead of picking one city and saying, this is where it's going to be, you spread it all out. So that part doesn't surprise me. But yeah, if there's only a few, well, I guess it's Canada.
Six was my,
I'm not even sure
like,
Vancouver could get there.
Well, so Vancouver is one of the teams that was thought of. The rest of the article said this. Current bids for 2030 are only Sapporo, Japan, and Salt Lake City.
Okay.
Vancouver was in the mix for a while, apparently, and then the BC government was like, we're not doing that. So mm-hmm. It looks like it's just Japan and Salt Lake City. And even that, the report said Salt Lake is considered more likely for 2034.
Okay.
So it feels like just Sapporo, Japan is where you're going to... Be thinking about for 2030.
Yeah, which obviously from a hockey perspective, if the NHL was back in the Olympics, is not ideal.
Nope.
In terms of time differences, if it's in Salt Lake City, you put them in the, like, if as soon as the Olympics goes back to Salt Lake City,
the NHL is back.
The NHL, yeah, miraculously, sure, all of those concerns that they have will disappear.
Yep.
So 2034, so what? Connor McDavid will be... what, 40 by then?
40,
He can still make his Olympic debut against a 39-year-old Austin Matthews. It'll be great. It'll be fascinating. Fascinating and well worth the wait. Although maybe there will have been one World Cup in between.
God, Connor Bedard would be like almost 28 at that point.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Boy, oh, boy. Anyway, yeah, so I thought that was really interesting. Like, just the idea that we're just going to be like, oh, no, like every other Olympic is going to, Winter Olympics is going to be in North America, just because, like, those are some of the only places on the planet that can reasonably host a Winter Olympics. Even all the like weird dictatorships that use the Olympics to like prop up their regimes or whatever, even them, they're like, no, forget
but
it.
But they can still have the Summer Olympics for that, right?
Hey, there's always the Summer Olympics. Coming soon to also Qatar. Great. Perfect. And we will hold those in November and December. Yes. We will hold the Summer Olympics then. So yeah, that's it for the show this week. Sean, why don't you hit him with some plugs?
You can find me at The Athletic, both my writing and my podcast with Ian Mendez. Got that piece on the Kraken that's up right now. If you want to watch all the ways that I was wrong about a team, might do another salary cap court later in the week. Might bring back some guys, including our old pal Jordan Binnington is on the list. Find out if he has a bad contract or not.
He does. Let me stop you right there. that everybody loves salary cap court. It's one of the best ones. Hall of Fame court, salary cap court. You put court in a hockey article?
Rules court. I'm there, man.
There you go.
It is a gimmick that can't miss.
10 out of 10 every time. And then for me, epringside.com, use the code ILOVEEP. If you didn't use the Black Friday code, a couple of weeks ago, tough shit, I guess. It was 50% off for a year, I think, something like that. I don't remember now. None of my business. They just let me read all the articles for free. Use the code ILOVEEP when you sign up for an annual subscription. They'll tack 3 months onto the end of your existing year. So that's 15 months for the cost of 12. I don't know how that breaks down beyond that. The Puck Soup Patreon, patreon.com/PuckSoup. Me and Sean just did a bonus episode yesterday where we played the beloved holiday game show, Gift of the Razzmi, which it's a little complicated to explain. However, people like it. So there's that. And more bonus episodes coming your way all month as usual, including one this week with the aforementioned Gronk Gronkowski. So check all that out. And that's it. We're done. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good week.
Bye-bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FU commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.